Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. And we are studying the Billy Meier case. We're going to talk about, well, I always make these plans in the show and then I go off on tangents, but I'm going to talk, at least my plans are at this point, talking about the Billy Meier, kind of a Billy Meier overview. I'm going to talk about creation, and I might mention its wake and sleep cycles. We're going to talk a little bit about enthusiasm as it's described in the Mind of Thoughts, and then discuss the New World Order a bit. At least that's the plan. Who knows what will actually take place. Billy grew up in an area in Switzerland farther north than where he lives now, in a place called Niederflux, which was close to, I guess, a town named Bulak, which was surrounded by what are called the Eichenmoser and Bruder Mountains, as well as wide forests and extensive meadows and fields. Now, these mountains, the Eichenmoser and Bruder Mountains, are difficult to find on the internet, but there's a guy in Switzerland who has taken some pictures of them. So if you'll be diligent and Google around, you can find some very, very beautiful pictures. And you can see where Billy grew up. And it was about 1941, May, I believe it was, 3 a.m. one morning, he went outside. He crawled out a lower window in his bedroom, and he sat down on a bench that his father had built, and he looked up at a beautiful starry sky. And let me read to you what he said about that fantastic sky. He said, "I could not see the moon. However, the sky was clear and wrapped in velvety black, and millions of stars shone down from the firmament. For a few minutes, I sat there like that and looked up at the stars while pondering and in my thoughts flying far into the universe. However, suddenly, something peculiar happened inside of me, which from the next moment irrevocably changed my whole life. Strangely touched, I looked at my hands and my body, and I could only vaguely recognize them. So I touched my body and felt it, and then I heard my own voice say, 'My life is made out of the love of creation.' And I could not explain why I said that and which power led me to speak these words. A slight shiver came over me, although the night was quite warm. And then I noticed that I also felt peculiar. Nevertheless, I was not frightened. Again, I looked up to the stars and recognized that the stars were distant suns in the vast outer space, and that these shone by the means of their own power, by themselves, even though they were created from the light of the love of creation, as is everything in the whole universe. And again, words, the origins of which I could not decipher, the sense of which I was, however, able to grasp. As with the first words escaped from my lips, everything is created out of the light of love." And then further words follow. "The space between the stars is empty, yet not empty. Everything that exists in the whole universe is a living vision. Everything is creation, and creation itself." You know, there's this beautiful passage. It's in one of Billy's books. It's called The Law of Love, or Love Letter 27. perhaps he has two books on love. It says, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation radiates love. And every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love. And love is the highest principle in all creation. And through it, everything exists in absolute logic. And there's another passage in Billy's book called The Goblet of Truth, which says something to the effect of stones, rivers, plants, animals, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form, and these spirit forms are on a journey through time which involves many, many lifetimes. And death is this just the passage into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected to one another by psychic swinging waves. And I always tell people to remember a time when they went into the forest and they heard the crickets and the birds, and they heard all the sounds. And if you've ever been in a forest in the evening, particularly a swampy area in the forest, you will hear a cacophony of noises that you've probably not heard very often. So creation, all of these creatures, everything that you see, the plants, the animals, have a life form that comes from their spirit. And the spirit is a tiny fragment of the universal consciousness. And there is a universal intelligence that's a neutral, positive entity. It radiates love, but it really has no demands that it makes on humanity. It doesn't command us to do anything. It also doesn't rescue us. It's not a Heavenly Father. But your spirit form, which is sometimes called your innermost creational nature, as a fragment of the universe, will impulse you in the way you should go in life. We all have this spirit form, which is a tiny fragment, a tellstock of the universal consciousness. It never dies. It records everything that you do. It will tell you if your thinking is right or wrong, if you've learned to pay attention to it. It cannot be harmed by anything in the physical world. It comes into the body of the fetus at 21 days, and it sends an energy throughout the body in a lattice structure, causes the heart to beat. It animates the tiny fetus. It brings in the personality, the conscious mind, the subconscious mind, the unconscious mind, and the heart starts to beat. And the spirit form brings, it is the spiritual consciousness, and it brings a new material consciousness for another lifetime. And the spirit form reincarnates for millions, even billions of years, and there's a particular evolution that takes place, and there are seven different categories in this evolution. And we're all on a very, very long journey through many, many lifetimes. And in each one of your lifetimes, you'll have a different personality. You'll grow up under a different set of circumstances. But the wisdom, the essence of your evolution of your previous lifetimes will be programmed into your subconscious, and it will be stored in your spirit form, your innermost creational nature, which will give you impulses to strive. And that's one of the creational natural laws. the law of striving, evolutive striving. Without striving, there is no life. Your sense of striving will give you your sense of life. If you're going through a phase in life where you're unhappy, look close and see if you're striving enough. There is no happiness without striving. Striving is the purpose for your existence. You're striving to evolve your consciousness. And if you're ignoring these impulses from your innermost creational self, you cannot be happy. The other important aspect of happiness is the harmony that you keep in your psyche. The more harmony you have, the greater your capacity for happiness. And how do you maintain a harmonious nature? Well, you have to be in neutral positive balance, and you have to be neutral positive in your thinking, and you need to tell yourself these kinds of things. Let me run down through this list. I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm cheerful, I'm relaxed, I'm thankful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm in harmony, I persist, I endure, I persevere, I'm calm, I'm stable, I always remain relaxed and thereby gain might over myself. So these are just categories from the book called The Might of Thoughts, and we're going to talk about in the book, we're going to talk about enthusiasm today. And maybe we'll jump right into that now, and I'll circle back on more of the Billy Meyer overview thing, because I kind of jumped right into the middle of the spiritual teachings. There is a simple psychological law that in the human being a deep tendency exists by which he or she becomes exactly what he or she thinks, tends, and nurtures. If you want to achieve something positive, then you need to create an evolutive enthusiasm. Wishes will remain wishes, which never manifest because they cannot be realized by the might of the thoughts. Wishes in this form are only unprocessed ideas. So in order to have your thoughts manifest, you need to have wish ideas and wish imaginations, which are capable of manifesting and can therefore be realized by means of the might of the thoughts. And the might of the thoughts is sufficiently strengthened by means of the necessary enthusiasm. And I'm still trying to get down to the bottom of this enthusiasm thing, because I'd really like to have enthusiasm every day. Some days I got it, man, and it's great. And other days, poof, it goes away. And I'm trying to figure out why. Ideas, imaginations, and efforts must be retained in the consciousness and newly nourished again. I'm starting to learn that. And again by the thoughts, so that the consciousness thereby actually absorbs and holds on to them. And that's why I created that phrase that I repeat all the time on the show, and maybe you can learn this. I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm thankful, I'm in harmony, I persist, I persevere, I endure, I am calm, I'm satisfied. Now, satisfaction is an important concept too, because if you've fallen into unsatisfaction, it's going to take away your initiative. You talk about no enthusiasm, become unsatisfied. Your satisfaction is critical. When you become unsatisfied, you're actually expressing an aversion that you have to yourself. And again, that's a topic that I'd like to research in a little more detail. But in terms of these wish ideas and wish imaginations, so we're trying, see, this is how we keep our enthusiasm, by the wish ideas and the wish enthusiasm, which create a pictorial impression in the consciousness. So this is a consciousness picture. It's fluidly constructed like an apparition. So these pictorial impressions in the consciousness, however, must be understood. One must not understand the pictorial nature of the impressions in the consciousness to be a form in which an effectively really visible picture exists. So it's not a clear picture, but we're searching for a picture. In reality, the pictorial imagination, it's what Billy calls a consciousness picture, which is fluidly constructed like an apparition. It works like a pictorial haze, so it's almost like you're looking through a fog. Recently, for the consciousness and the subconscious, it's not definitely tangible. So anyway, building this consciousness picture is part of holding on to this enthusiasm. So you have to go from a wish to a wish idea and a wish imagination. And the enthusiasm is so important for the daily life. And this is something that I'm working to hold on to and to grasp. The book, The Might of Thoughts, is a very important book. And it's a book that's written for the people of the earth who are ill in their consciousness. So tell yourself, my consciousness is like a garden, and I have good and healthy plants in my garden, just like I have good and healthy thoughts in my consciousness. And I want to strengthen and nurture these good and healthy thoughts, just like I strengthen and nurture these good, healthy plants that are in my garden. I am the master of my own destiny. I create the circumstances in my life by the might of my own thoughts. And it is the nature of the thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can be brought into fruition. So I'm the master of my own destiny. And my good thoughts lead to good feelings, and good feelings lead to good habits. And good habits lead to good circumstances in my life. So I nurture my good thoughts so they can produce good feelings and good habits and circumstances in my life. To nurture means we're going to clarify these good thoughts. And these good thoughts are going to spread out to our consciousness. Calm thoughts, calm feelings come from constructive thoughts. That's one of the signs that you're having constructive thoughts, is it brings a calmness to your whole life and a sense of purpose. If you're going through a depression right now, if you're going through a time where you're really sad, who knows what happened? I don't want to bring the circumstance up, but whatever difficulty you're dealing with, the answer to that problem is first controlling your thoughts. Because good thoughts lead to good feelings. See, the feelings arrive from the thoughts. And the thoughts drive the feelings. And good feelings circle back into the psyche. You see, you want to steer your thoughts, because most of the time, automatic thoughts cause a problem in the psyche. They disturb the psyche, the automatic thoughts mostly. You want to have steered thoughts. You want to take control of the steering wheel and steer your thoughts so you have good neutral, positive thoughts so you can build confidence in yourself. You know, the power from your thoughts, the power of your thoughts do not come from you. The power of your thoughts come from the impetus for the power of your thoughts comes from the creation itself, which is an amazing thing. The power that the thinking uses as an impetus does not stem from the human being himself or herself. It streams in the spirit and from there into the consciousness, coming out of the immeasurable expanses of space. It stems from the tremendous wealth of spirit of the Ur-life of the creation, which is responsible for all life in the universe. For the human being, this unidentifiable and mysterious Ur-life, the creation, embodies the actual breath of life, which universally gives life to all and everything. However, the Ur-life actually also embodies that secret which the human being is never able to fathom, the creation itself. However, it would be false, arrogant, and irresponsible to name the creation God, because the creation is neither God nor anything similar. The word God is an age-old term from a likewise age-old language of a foreign people. The term Ishwish, or King of Wisdom, comes from the language of the Lyrians, who were here, I believe, 389,000 years ago. People, tremendous people with tremendous power in their material consciousness. The word God is from this age-old foreign language, the Lyrian language, has nothing to do with creation. The word God from time immemorial has been used as a designation for human beings because of their spiritual and consciousness-based powers and the abilities resulting from them. This is one of the things that I wanted to try to throw out there tonight, is that there are, I actually like this term that David Icke uses, the prison religions. And we have prison religions on this planet, which are prisons that you don't see. They hold you prisoner. They hold your consciousness prisoner because they suck all of the independent thinking out of your consciousness. You were designed to be an independent thinker, to make your own mind up, to have your own ideas, not to have some outside source, whether it's a television or a book or a person, do your thinking for you. You're an independent thinker. You're not a sheep. That's an analogy that these prison religions create, that you're a sheep. You are not dependent. Now, we're dependent on creation. We're dependent on the sun shining. We're dependent on air and things like that. But you are responsible for your life. You are responsible for your thoughts. You are responsible for the circumstances in your life. You are not the victim of circumstances. You are not using the power you have. That's the only thing. None of us use all the power we have, but we're learning. We're slowly learning to use the incredible power of the might of our thoughts. You have an innermost creational nature. That's one of the ideas that I wanted to hold on to tonight. Something for us to contemplate. The innermost creational nature. It's the part of you that generates the impulses for striving. And these impulses for striving really are critical. See, your innermost creational nature gives life to the material consciousness and to the subconsciousness. It gives life to the body. It creates impulses for striving for that which is higher. So you've got to learn, and I have to learn, to distinguish these impulses. This is your true spiritual self, the innermost creational nature. Now you have an inner nature, which is called the false self, the false ego. It complicates everything. It tends to try to create a tyranny over your innermost creational nature. It is actually threatened by your evolution. So these are two aspects of the human beings. So we want to be guided by the innermost creational nature, because that will make us stronger and stronger and clearer and stronger. That is the most important, one of the most important concepts. Because everything that you can conceive can bear fruit. So when doubts surface, and this is also something that I want to continue to research, I'm still working on this aspect myself, because anxiety is defeated by the intellect. Usually anxiety occurs because there's some aspect of something which is unknown to us. So it's interesting, the more you learn about it, the more you learn, the more anxiety goes away and interest increases. Like you get more and more interested in this thing that was causing you anxiety. It was an unknown in your life, but as you maintain your neutralness and continue to investigate it, it became more and more interesting. And you realize that what was causing you anxiety is actually a great learning tool for you. So it's interesting that the answer to the problem sometimes is very close to the problem, learning more about the problem. So whenever doubts surface in any form, they must simply be regarded and treated as obstacles. Anxiety is something you just need to get to the bottom of. Don't let it control you. Control the anxiety. Everything which the human being ever conceives and allows to become ideas, the imaginations and wishes and efforts, ultimately the setting of the zeal, which is your ultimate target. I don't want to say goal. Billy doesn't like that term, I don't think. But it's your ultimate destination point. It's like a place you're going. So you have a thought. It's a wish. It becomes a wish idea or a wish imagination. You nurture it. There's a consciousness picture. You add some enthusiasm to it, and behold, you're just a step or two from reality. This is one of the most important concepts from the Might of the Thoughts. Another great book for you to look at sometime is called The Way to Live. And this is a very, very interesting book with a different kind of information associated with it. Die Art zu Lieben is the name of the book. It was written in 1995 through 1997 by Edward Albert Meyer. It was translated by Vivian Legg and Dyson Devine. It's, of course, a bilingual book. So it has the spiritual teaching evolution code, which will release impulses from the storage banks. But you have to read it in German. And you don't have to master German, though, to have these impulses have an effect in your life. So anyway, one of the concepts from this book that we've been talking about again and again is fulfilling your duty to yourself. Excuse me, don't turn your back on yourself. Be also benevolent, good-natured, compassionate. Do not chastise yourself. No feelings of inferiority, no feelings of self-abuse. No flattery either. Be gentle to yourself. Care for the health of your body and your mind and your psyche. Take the time to challenge your body and your mind. One of the things it also says is don't devote yourself to your passions. I think we're programmed by society to devote ourselves to our passions. It's a real shame. It would be nice if everywhere we go, we weren't been bombarded by all of these de-evolutive impulses. Have you ever listened? So much of the music now creates de-evolution impulses, I call them. It fractures your thought processes. It's very unhealthy. Use your intelligence. Use your rational logic. And you will have fulfillment in your responsibility. Care for your body. Don't let yourself go ragged. You know, I have actually made improvements in that area. I'm very proud of myself. You know, if you start to develop good habits, and it's very, very important. You need to give yourself sufficient self-respect. Don't do hidden things that you wouldn't do in front of a stranger. Speak the truth openly, unashamed. Act decently, or you will forfeit your self-esteem. Never allow yourself to appear ragged in your clothing. You know, keep up with your shaving, even if you have a beard. Never lose confidence in yourself. You know, there are people out there that have probably had more lifetimes than you. Never feel less, because over time, I think we all become Ishwishes. We all go through these seven steps of evolution. We all merge back with creation. All of us will eventually be kings of wisdom. Do not try to be the person that plays the shining lead role. Hasn't it been interesting the way Billy has stayed back all these years? And a few unknown people come forward and talk about his material. It's really interesting. I mean, he's never done a talk show that I've ever known about. Very, very few YouTube videos. It's all written down. It's for the people that are willing to dig it out. And I've felt very fortunate to be able to bring this show to you for years now. And I started out, boy, I've learned a lot in the past couple of years, especially in the past year and a half, I would say. And I've been able to start to apply these principles. And I look back on things I did a couple of years ago thinking, man, I can't believe I did those things. I mean, I can't believe I guess I've come a long way in a very short period of time. Another thing to watch out for is boredom. Boredom is the death of all initiative. Whoever falls prey to boredom, the next thing you'll fall into is your addictions. You'll start living towards your addictions again. So one of the things about the spiritual way of life is if you find yourself in boredom, maintain your neutral positive attitude as much as possible and take a small tiny step towards something a little productive. You don't have to force yourself to work hard, but make a tiny step in the right direction and continue to make tiny steps in the right direction. And this is important, because you all have to learn to entertain yourself at times. Only few human beings are able to stand how boredom and poverty of thought lead to a uninteresting inner nature Another blessing that's talked about in The Way to Live is the blessing related to forgetting. And it's a good thing we can't remember. Very few people remember previous lives accurately. And it's a good thing that we don't. I think sometimes we'll pull an impulse out of the storage bank and have a feeling that may be a reaction to a connection to a previous life back. But most of the time, we do not remember all of the details, which is a good thing because we'd be overwhelmed to the point of insanity. Hello, Eve. I just got a little message from the chat room. And if you hear a snoring in the background, that's my dog. He's been snoring like crazy. You know, it's interesting. Whenever you're making movement forward, there's always some negative aspect. So we cannot throw the negative out. We always have to maintain that negative and realize that any negative that you have in your life is important. So your goal is to stay balanced with that negative. Don't try to push the negative out. Stay in balance with it. If it's meant to go away, it will, and it probably will. The more neutral you are, the more you focus on your spiritual evolution. A lot of those negatives, they come and go, but they're always there for a purpose. And they even sometimes get into the way of striving. And I wanted to read a little bit about striving. It's so critical here. Striving for that which is higher, for evolution, for the highest possible absolute full development. Every single vision, from the very first breath to its very last, also strives for that which is higher, for evolution and completion. So that's where happiness comes in life, from your striving. That doesn't mean you need to work so hard that you're going to hurt yourself, you know. Just keep striving, even if it's a small thing. Put one foot in front of another. Be neutral. Maintain your neutrality. The creation itself, as well as all its creatures in Wesenheiten, is imbued with the power of striving in order to attain success, the future progress, and that which is higher. Striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. So there's two aspects here. When you're cleaning out the garage, that is physical striving. When you're cleaning up a cat's mess or the dog's mess or your husband or your wife's mess, that's part of striving. And it has a physical component, which is the physical work you're doing, and a spiritual component, which is, can I maintain neutral positive and have enthusiasm? There's the key. If you can have not only neutral positive attitude, but enthusiasm. Enthusiasm can transform your whole life. And I'm trying to learn more about enthusiasm. Striving is the power of the spiritual as well as the physical. And striving is an incontrovertible creational law. In order to reach through incessant evolution, that which is higher and absolutely fully developed. So this is a very important idea. This is the creational natural law of striving, the creational natural law of harmony, which is your neutral positive, creational natural law of love, which says we live and help live, which I could go digress in a long story for myself, but I won't. It's very interesting the way that works out. And there's a time, and I don't have all of the answers, especially where this is concerned. There's been times, I think there are people, and I digress, take this with a grain of salt. I'm not reading this from the Meyer material. I think there are people that you may want to steer clear of that would take advantage of your help. And, well, maybe I just leave it at that. So follow your own impulses. When it comes to what help you give to who, when, and, let's just leave it at that. That's probably enough said there. I want to also talk about, if I can find it in my notes, which is always the next challenge. I am completely redoing my website, so my notes are a little bit all over the place, which I think they look better. I'm working also with learning another web technology at the same time. So, and I don't know why I had to do this now, which it's, I don't think it was the best time to do this at this particular time, but sometimes we do things when we have to, or when we get the impulse to do them. I was talking about prison religions earlier and prison histories. And a lot of times we take literally that which was always symbolic. And, for example, I want to talk about one of the prison religions, which was in Babylon. Very interesting that the Illuminati even worship someone called Nimrod and his son Tammuz. It's interesting that Tammuz and his father, Nimrod, are said to be one. And there's also a female element in the Babylonian Trinity. This is Queen Semiramis. She was symbolized by a dove. Interesting. This is so interesting. It's so similar to Christianity. Tammuz was called the son of God in ancient Babylon. And they say he, in a sense, died for the sins of humanity. And guess what? They put him in a tomb. They rolled a rock across the front. 3 days later, just like the resurrection story, they rolled the rock back and Tammuz was gone. So, what are the elites planning for our future? And Billy talks about this in The Might of Thoughts. And he says, not in The Might of Thoughts, but in The Gobble of Truth, he says, they are taking away our right of self-determination. And they're going to create a world government, a cashless society, an Orwellian government, which has propaganda, surveillance, misinformation. We already have the control of our speech through that which is politically correct. The other thing that the global elite want is a microchip population. They want to put an RFID chip in everyone. And through that chip, they're going to control you. I mean, that's the plan anyway. Can it come about? I certainly hope not. And I've talked about this in FIGU Bulletin number 2, the deep space platform, which is something up there in space now, looks out at space. It's this whole set of some kind of technology that has powerful cameras which can look down on the world, can see everything. They see everything from this deep space platform. This is something that was covered earlier on in FIGU Bulletin. Is very, very interesting. This whole DSP monitoring system. It's I tell you what, man, it's going to be a shocking thing, though. It's as we see this, it's a horrible vision, which is completely, it's becoming apparent, if you have open eyes, the terrifying vision, this new world order. It's coming. One of the things that we're faced with today, not only the fires and the hurricanes, which I've talked about many, many times, but in 2020, as soon as 2020, the government of the U.S. can collapse. That's talked about in the Meyer material. It's right around the corner, folks. Cannot believe it. I'm totally shocked. I'm in denial myself. The fires on the West Coast are just over the top. The hurricanes coming up from the Bahamas and the Caribbean are just destroying everything. It's unbelievable. The corruption in the government, oh, it's just beyond. So it's very, very important that we keep in mind what can happen. And I'm so glad thousands and thousands of people are listening to these archives, because maybe we have a chance. Because as it says in the Henoch prophecies, enormous firestorms and gigantic hurricanes will sweep over the USA and bring devastation, destruction, annihilation. Two civil wars are possible. Our country could break up into five different areas. And the worst event, the worst possible event, is when a computerized system in North America runs out of control and releases chemical, biological, nuclear weapons. Let me read it real quick. But not even all the terrible happenings will hinder the USA in continuing to proceed with her actions against all countries, even when the North American continent will be stricken by the most terrible catastrophe which has ever been recorded. Evil military powers will wreak havoc with computerized and nuclear, biological, chemical weapons, whereby it will also happen that computerized weapons will become independent and cannot be controlled any longer by human beings. And it says, overall, this is the most important part of the Henoch prophecies. I have to hold out that we can avoid part of this, if not all of it. Well, we've already got the hurricanes and the fires, so I guess we can't avoid all of it. One warning. Religious experiences shrink part of the brain. The hippocampal atrophy, which is part of your brain, which is related to religion, the hippocampus belongs to what's called the limbic system, and it plays a role in the short-term, long-term memory and navigation. There are certain scientists that argue that some individuals in the religious minority who struggle with their beliefs experience high levels of stress. This causes a release of stress hormones that are known to depress the volume of the hippocampus over time. I remember watching this film. I may have the actual link somewhere of this girl who was valedictorian in her class. She was speaking in front of the whole class body, and you could tell something was bothering her subconsciously. And then all of a sudden she started talking about her religious beliefs and about God and all the help she had, and she just started shaking and going and wiggling back and forth, and pretty soon she was just, you know, you could tell she was on the verge of collapse, and she did. She collapsed right there. And it's because, I think, of this struggle internally, because your spirit form, your innermost creational nature, knows the truth. And your material consciousness has gotten involved in this prison religion. And this is creating this inner conflict. And people struggle with this, and I struggle with it and didn't even know. I think the last time I visited a Christian study group, now this is, gosh, personal information I'm revealing. It's kind of strange, but me and my wife were driving. I was feeling sick. I was kept thinking about, I don't know what I was thinking about, but I think it was an internal conflict that I was having, and a lot of it's subconscious and unconscious, and you're not aware of it. And I just had to have her pull over, and I just threw up everywhere. And that was the last any kind of meeting I went to. And that's shortly after that, I probably started to really push into the Meyer material. Now, part of what's in our biblical books is described in Contact Report 212. These scribes who wrote these books down, a lot of times they would write down whatever they wanted. They didn't write down what they were told. And they falsified things intentionally. Let me read a few of these little points. It became entirely perceptible that all the biblical books were not written in a single case by the person to whom they are ascribed. So it is also incorrect that the Gospel of Luke and Acts and the Apostles come from Luke. And furthermore, the book of Job was not written by the man himself. Now, the book of Job was not even called the book of Job. There was no letter J in the ancient world. So the book of Job was actually the book of Iob. And the people we call James and John, their names began with the letter Y, and they're unpronounceable for us today. So the truth of the matter is, the apostles, generally speaking, were illiterates. And they let the scribes write the letters. They had to pay these scribes, too. So the one dictating a letter couldn't control what the scribe wrote down. Many things were falsified. And this also applies to the fantastic stories that surround Paul. Now, the Meyer material says he was in a consciousness confusion. He thought of himself as a martyr. And that Paul was actually killed by assassins. According to the Meyer material, also Moses was killed by assassins within his own ranks. Matthew couldn't read and write. Matthew dictated his book to a scribe named Joshua, who interpreted the whole thing. He interpreted it himself and kind of falsified it. Now, allegedly, in 1963 in Jerusalem, a Greek Catholic priest named Isa Rashid discovered a small cave in the slope of a nearby hill. He was with his friend, Billy Edward Albert Meyer, and they grabbed these ancient scrolls and animal skin, and they see a 2,000-year-old biographical narrative of a man named Emmanuel. He was not named Jesus Christ because there was no letter J in the ancient world. He could have been called Emmanuel. He could have been called Yeshua. He could have been called Iesus. But he wasn't called any name that began with the letter J. The letter J wasn't invented until about 1550. A man named Gian Giorgio Tarissino, who was an Italian scholar and playwright, who started throwing in this new letter he liked. He called the letter J, and it had a J sound. There's a group, it was called the Giza Intelligences. It was headed in the 73,000-year-old cubical constructions far below the Giza Plateau. And these people used religion to control the people of the earth. There was also a group called the Pegasus Refugees, who were a group of extraterrestrials that came to Earth from a space-time-shifted region of the Pegasus constellation. They align themselves with the Giza intelligences. Now, they died eventually because their respiration equipment failed. These people, they would breathe what we would call poison gas. And this Pegasus refugee group attempted to cause severe damage to Billy's center using some kind of technology that was working on a microwave basis. And they would fly around the Earth. Their stellar drive was destroyed, but their anti-gravity drive still worked. And I think it was the Giza intelligences, very oddly, who destroyed their interstellar drive. This Giza intelligence group was very strange. The Pegasus refugees, they landed in Brazil, and some Brazilian group Nazis captured this ship. So there were Nazis in Brazil that captured this ship of these poison gas breathers from the Pegasus constellation that aligned themselves with the Giza intelligences. Now we are seeing great corruption in the Vatican today. And it says in Contact Report 215 that the Christian religion will collapse and the churches and monasteries will end up in ruins and ashes. Something that happened not long ago that completely fell out of sight with this Vatican Monsignor who was caught red-handed during a gay drug party in his apartment in the Vatican. Also, this fellow named Vatican Treasurer, the Cardinal George Pell, has like 20 or 30 complaints against him for pedophilia. These are people that are adults now that are going after these people. Again, the Henoch prophecies say that after the turn of the millennium, the papacy will exist only a short period. Pope John Paul II is the third from the last in this position. After him, only one additional pontificate will follow. Then a Pontifex Maximus follows, who will be known as Petrus Romanus. Under his religious rule, the end of the Catholic Church will come. So whenever Petrus Romanus is there, that'll be the last pope. A total collapse will become inevitable. That will be the beginning of the worst catastrophe that will have ever befallen the human beings on Earth. So we have some very, very, very difficult things to face us here in the very near future. I want to thank you guys for coming to the show and thank the folks for listening to the archives. It's been a real honor to bring this show to you for many years. We'll be back on before long. Have a great evening. Thank you very much.